everyone, and welcome to minute 99 of season 3 of Movie Road Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me again today is David Brook of Blueprint Review. Welcome back, David.
Hello, hello, hello. Ready for, I think we're out of the glass now, so we're ready to see where we're heading next.
Well, we're going to be talking about diplomacy. How's that? Does that work with you?
Sounds good.
The last resort of diplomacy. So we actually have a great cut between yesterday's minute and today's minute, because today's minute starts a completely different segment, completely different scene with characters we haven't seen in a while. So we go back to minute 99 begins with Hasseldorf giving his analysis and ends with John finding a unique way to enter a room. So again, we're back with Hasseldorf, who is the Channel 4's expert on terrorism and hostages and the Helsinki syndrome and all that stuff that we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago. I don't even remember when that was. And the way that they film this is great, because we catch him mid-sentence. He goes, "Is the last resort of diplomacy?" Then couldn't we just as well say that terrorism has an equal claim on being that too? So, just hearing the way that it's cut here doesn't make much sense, because we don't really know what he's trying to say. It just sounds like a lot of gibberish the way that it is. When we get to the script, I'll actually read to you what it's supposed to be there, and it makes a little more sense, but we'll get there at the end of today's episode. So Hasseldorf then continues his analysis of the situation, and I love how you have like two TV screens there that he's being shown on at the same time. We get double vision, double Hasseldorf, that type of thing. And then, as we're watching the screen, there's the screen gets obscured by a file that's, or an envelope or something. Actually, it looks like a file that's being, and the screen then pans up and we see a young woman there, and she smiles, and then the shot changes and we get to see our good friend Thornburg. Mm-hmm. And, he's both surprised and excited all at once, because he says to her, "You got something. Tell me you got something." And she looks back and says to him, "Just McLean's name, badge number, employment record, vital statistics, and his family's home address right here in L.A. So, we've talked about this a lot over the course of this whole show. The fact that, if this was being made today, things would just be so much simpler. Getting all of this information, they just have to, go onto Google and do a quick search, and they probably will find it pretty quickly. All this information. But for me, the thing that stands out in all of these items that she says she has, what's the first thing that she says to him? What's the first thing she has of him? His name. His name.
Oh, yeah.
They already know his name. So what is, what type of new information is she bringing here? we have his name. Okay, his badge number is something that's helpful. His employment record is helpful. His vital statistics are helpful. His family's home address in L.A., which is interesting that they were able to still find it. They had to probably do a little more digging for that. Because, again, who knows if – we know they're not divorced. So the question is where is it mentioned in his – file, that his wife and kids now live in LA at 24 Sycamore Avenue or wherever it is. Today on Google, it would be simpler to try to find someone's location that way. Mm. I remember they probably still have it, but I haven't seen it in years. But like 15 or 20 years ago, I remember going to a website where you can basically type in any address and it'll give you a picture of that building. And you can see, maybe it was even on Google Maps, where you just see, they have a shot of
But yeah, you can do that on Google Maps. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the type of thing. But back then, you know, 34 years ago, they couldn't do these things. So like,
could find the phone book.
No, but if they went in the phone book, they would find Holly Gennaro. They wouldn't find Holly McClain.
Yeah.
You know, because she would want people to be able to find her as Holly Gennaro. So they wouldn't find that. So that means they must have gotten it from New York. It must be somewhere in his file. You know, maybe he put in an order that you know, he wants half of his salary to be forwarded, you know, in a check to this address. You know, maybe you know, that's the only plausible thing that I could think of. Because normally it just wouldn't be listed in anyone's employment record, you know, that estranged wife lives, you know, in LA. Here's the address. You know, that type of thing.
Mm.
I know. Seems a little strange. They
might have just been digging at the police, found his police station and spoken to someone there and got the address that way, maybe. But
right. Could be too. But then again, but no, but think about it. You know, if someone were to call you up and say, David, okay, someone that you work with, what's their home address? The odds are you don't know the answer to that.
No.
You might have to Google
it. Odds are you wouldn't give it to them. I guess the police.
That's true also. Especially, that's right, a reporter calls up the police and says, do you know John McClain? Do you know his wife's address in L.A.? So, yeah. But maybe nowadays people are more suspicious than they were 34 years ago. You know, maybe back then they would give up that information a lot quicker. So, you want the address? Yeah. Sure. It's 24 Sycamore Lane, you know, that type of thing. I don't know. And, you know... Again, I'm still, I guess the only thing about name that could make sense is maybe they have his full name, you know, by saying, his name is John Francis McClain. I don't know. I don't remember. I mean, they haven't mentioned in this movie what his full name is. They might, maybe in the future movies, they mention his full name. That I don't know. But, you know, that's the only thing that would make sense. But again, who cares? You know, who cares what his middle name is?
Yeah.
They already know who he is. They know that he's John McClain.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. And, you know, at this point, we see that Thornburg just says, whoa, he's like speechless, which is very uncommon for him. You know, to use the Seinfeld line, he is speechless. I'm without speech. You know, and he's someone who likes to talk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, he's a reporter. It's a good thing that he likes to talk. I guess it goes with the job.
Yeah.
And then the shot changes, and we hear an elevator ding. Of many, yes. They like to use that as a tone to inform us of things.
Mm.
You know, that an elevator is coming, mostly, I guess. And, you know, first we get a shot of Eddie, you know, standing on guard. And then the camera pivots a little bit, and we see that Uli is there with him, you know, Al Leong, as we mentioned earlier this week, that he's there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we see Colonel and Hans come out of the elevator, and they walk towards them. And my first question is, okay, what are Eddie and Uli thinking at this point? You know, they had four guys go up and two come down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they getting concerned? You know, like, what's going on here? Most of the people we're working with are dead.
Probably realize they're in the wrong job.
Exactly.
Well, all they're thinking there's more money for us to when they share it out.
That's true. Also, there's larger shares for each of us. That's true. True. Right, because I mean, how many are left there? We have Hans, we have Carl, we have Uli, we have Eddie, we have Theo. Guy.
I'm rubbish with the names.
Theo and Christoph. Those are so we have six left. So that means seven are dead. Okay, we had Tony, and then we had Marco, who, you know, Tony was killed by John when they fell down the flight of stairs. Then he had Marco, who was shot when he was on top of the table. Oh, sorry, Heinrich died before that. First we had Heinrich, who showed up at the door and got shot. Then we had Marco, who gets shot up and then thrown out the window. Then after that, we had James and Alexander. Both of them were blown up by the by the explosion when he throws the chair down the elevator shaft. And then the last two were the ones that died earlier this week. We had Fritz and then Franco. So that's seven dead, and we have six left. So we've passed the halfway mark of dead terrorists or dead thieves.
They've doubled their money.
That's right. That's very true. Well, John has doubled their money. They didn't do it on their own.
Yeah. No.
And but it makes you wonder what is going through their minds. It also means that there's nobody downstairs guarding, because if you have Eddie and Uli here, the two of them originally were down in the lobby. They're now up on the 30th floor. So what is stopping anyone from trying to come in from the lobby? Especially since the glass has been shattered there. Just the fact that, I don't know. I mean, the elevators, they have control of the elevators, but they don't have control of the stairway unless they locked it. But even if you lock a stairway, I'm sure the police can find a way to get in. That's what I would think.
They have those guys on the outside, but they have to run to get to the outside, don't they? So yeah, it's quite a mission for just six guys to totally man a huge skyscraper.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and then Hans, walks over towards the direction of both Eddie and Uli, and he throws the bag to Uli and says, "Go to work." And he goes, "Got it." And then he takes it and starts walking away. And then the shot changes and we get to see Holly and Ginny, who are crouched on the ground. You can see that Ginny is lying down on a couch. They asked her earlier to bring out a couch for her. So they did that. And she's, lying there to make sure that she doesn't give birth in the middle of a New Year's Eve terrorist party. And, the two of them see that Carl is still completely fuming, and he like takes his gun and destroys something on the side. Do you have any idea what that is that he's destroying?
It looks like a mini, like a tray of drinks. I mean, this looks like there's drinks on there.
Right, but like
a table of drinks, or like a mini bar, not a mini bar, like a little thing.
But it makes you wonder what that would be doing in the middle of like this lobby area. This is like a I was thinking maybe it's like...
Well, they had their party out there, didn't they? They were partying there. It'll just be leftover drinks, I guess. Yeah.
The leftover drinks are just on top of it. No, but my question is, like, what's that table there for? It's probably not meant for, for holding drinks. It might be used for holding drinks at this point because of the fact that they had a party. But, the original use of it, I think, is something
else. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense. It looks also somewhat like a podium.
Yeah, I was about to say it looks like a lectern or something like that.
Yeah, but it's straight. It doesn't have like a, it doesn't have like an angled top so that you could put pages there and, look at them from an angle.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Not really sure what that is. I was thinking maybe it's a bar or maybe it's a lectern, as you said, or something like that. And then Ginny says to Holly, she goes, "God, that man looks really pissed." Which she's pretty much stating the obvious to us. We can see that too.
Yeah.
And then Holly goes, "He's still alive." Then Ginny goes, "What? Only John can drive somebody that crazy." So first of all, I like the fact that it shows that Holly still has some hope in John, despite the fact that they are estranged. But at this, she's only concerned at this point whether John's still alive or not. That's the thing. They've been there for hours. I mean, literally hours. I mean, the sunset at 5. Let's say that the terrorists started their plot at 6:30. We had. A few weeks ago, we talked about that it was the 10 o'clock news. So my assumption is it's past midnight. So this is, they've been hostages for probably about 6 hours at this point. With Ellis a few weeks ago, there was the whole comment that, where are you going? And I'm going to, I'm tired of waiting to see who's going to get killed first, your husband or them, that type of thing. And that was the last we really saw of Holly. We haven't seen her since then. We saw her when Ellis was shot, and then they Hans
Cut to her
had,
reaction to the thing.
right, exactly. Hans is holding up the radio for John to listen or whatever. You know, and so it is nice to see that she still has hope and faith in John about everything.
Yeah.
And she also, at the same time, acknowledges John's qualities, both his good and bad qualities. You know, the fact that only John can make someone that angry. You know, she must be talking from personal
experience. Backhanded compliment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A very backhanded compliment. But
it goes back to what I mentioned at the yesterday's episode as well about less about Holly, but I mean showing Carl's reaction. Again, it's going to like fleshing out very minor characters by having him smash the glass up. It's again, it kind of adds a bit more depth to his character.
Yeah, which we saw him a few weeks ago turn over a desk. You know, we should send him to one of those break rooms.
You know, definitely.
Actually, he doesn't need it. He's got Nakatomi. He can break whatever he wants there for free. He doesn't have to pay for 30 minutes to do it, you know. and so, you know, the fact that she's shocked that John is still alive and, you know, is able to fend them off. Again, I don't know what that says about her faith in his abilities. Because she's shocked about it. It's not as if she says, oh, well, I know John. He's a great cop. He'll figure out a way of saving us, and he'll figure out. She's not looking at it from that perspective. She's like, oh, my God, I can't believe he's still alive. You know, maybe she was hoping that this would be, you know, she doesn't have to worry about a divorce if he gets killed.
Solve the relationship problem.
There you go. It solves the problem of, you know, whether he's sleeping in the guest room tonight or not. You know.
I don't know. She does have that little smile, though. You do get the idea that she's kind of
she kind
of look at her face, I guess, at the end of that. She's kind of got a bit of awe in there. She's got a.
Yeah.
She's turning back towards her John, I think, at this moment.
Well, you know,
but
maybe.
Yeah, but I know what you mean. There is definitely that element of surprise.
Though. Yeah. Well, maybe she's starting to be affected by Helsinki syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah.
And starting to think, oh, well, maybe I can fall in love with John again. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then the last 2 seconds of this minute just shows John backing his way into some room. You know, we're not 100% sure where this is, a tiled room that has some really strange marks on the wall, stuff like that. It looks like it's probably maybe still partially in construction or whatever it is. You know, and we see him that he's like scooching backwards on his back, you know, by pushing things forward from his back. And then he lies down and like looks up at the ceiling. And that's pretty much how this minute ends. You know, it definitely is a very unique way of entering a room. There's no question about that. So is there anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script again?
Oh, no, I think I'm good with that one.
Okay. All right, so the script, as I teased earlier, so it the script will give us the entire Hasseldorf speech. It says, it all depends what we mean by terror. If Clausewitz could say war is the last resort of diplomacy, couldn't we just as well say that terrorism has an equal claim to it? So it actually makes more sense when you read the whole quote, as opposed to what he just says in the movie, where we just hear the second half of it. Mm. You know, the idea that, okay, if war is the last resort to diplomacy, so basically can you substitute the term terrorism with war? Because terrorism is another whole level, you know, beyond war. That type of thing. And then it says, Mary comes inside the TV trailer, grinning ear to ear. Thornburg looks up from his Danish, a cute little chin napkin protecting his shirt collar. Thornburg says to her, you got something? And then she mentions the same things about, you know, all the different information that she found. And then we go back to the hostage area. And it says, Eddie and Uli are guarding the hostages. Hans and Carl return. Han tosses the bag of detonators to Uli, who grins and then leaves. So there's no discussion between them. That wasn't in the original script. And then Hallie has watched all this nervously, but Ginny's eyes follow Carl, who doesn't share the mood of the others. That one looks really pissed, Miss Gennaro. Thank God he's still alive. And then it says the door jars open. McLean all but crawls inside. So again, I like the way they do this. It gives a good description of what it is that they filmed, and the film expands a little bit on it, which works awesome. So I like that.
It's weird that she says the Miss Gennaro bit in there rather than just that girl looks really pissed. Kind of, I guess it's reconfirming her superiority or whatever, but it's a bit of an odd.
Well, she's her
Doesn't seem like
secretary.
something someone would say in that situation.
But she's her secretary, so maybe she's just used to calling her Miss Gennaro all the time.
Yeah, maybe, I guess. Yeah, true.
Right. Okay. So every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition, where my guest will give a story, misadventure, of something that happened along, during their life on the somehow related to holidays. So, David, you got another story for us?
Yeah, this one's a bit weak, but I'll go for it anyway. Basically, I'm gonna go for an Easter memory. So I've got two young daughters, and this was not this Easter, but I think the Easter before. It's during lockdown, I guess. We try to make Easter morning quite special. What we do, we like most people, like a lot of people, we do like a bit of an Easter egg hunt. But what we did that year, and it was kind of partly through my wife, is she's keen on orienteering, which is when you use maps to kind of it's kind of a race, but with maps, and you've got to find certain control points that are hidden around. My wife actually made a map for the girls, and we of where kind of a big kind of egg package was, and we. There was like a giant package with some kind of the bigger Easter eggs and things like that in there, all wrapped up with a bow and all this kind of stuff, and it was hidden. And this map showed us where it was. And what we did was chopped up the map into small pieces, and then hid those small pieces in like little mini eggs. And we put those around the other garden on the other side. We've got two sides. We've got a garden at the front and at the back. And so in the back garden, we had these little eggs hidden around, which had bits of map in. And the girls had to go and find these bits of map and figure out that it was a map, piece it together. So it's a really cool kind of little fun kind of thing to do on Easter morning.
That's a great idea,
And
yeah.
it all went really well. It was really nice and fun. But the only thing that kind of spoiled it slightly was they finally found the big parcel in the other garage, in the other garden, sorry, the garage, and with the map. Untied the bow for this big package full of Easter eggs, and when he opened it up, there was the biggest spider right on top, because it had been hidden in our kind of bush in our garden. There was this massive spider on top, and our girls and myself, I won't lie, are terrified of spiders and just like ran screaming like, ah! So
Once
it
again,
kind
we're hearing
of
stories
spoiled
of
the
David
lovely
running.
Easter
We're hearing stories of David running the opposite direction while his family needs to fend for themselves.
running and screaming. I'm not casting myself in a good light on this podcast. Yes, it was left for my loving wife to dispose of the spider. She mainly, I think, shooed it away. No squashing involved. I would have squashed it. Oh, lie. And Easter went on as normal. But yeah, that was a nice little moment.
Okay, great. So you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, so I write film reviews over at blueprintreview.co.uk, along with my fellow writers. So yeah, check it out.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher you might be using to listen to this show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for a movie or a minute. You can find me on Twitter and you can find me on Facebook. So, David, you feel like come back tomorrow to hit our 100th episode of this season?
Oh wow, nice. What a yes, definitely it'd be the special.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, we got some fun stuff to talk about tomorrow. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.